Zelen palčik te boli, zeleni listočok ne hojić, zeleni listočok ne hojić, ne hojić, pociluje mili zavojić. Zeleni listočok ne hojić, ne hojić, pociluje mili zavojić.
From a CD called Rešeto, that was Oksana Mucha from Lviv, Ukraine, and Porizalam Palček, I Cut My Finger. Вітаю вас всіх, шановні радіослухачі, на радіопередачу «Наш голос», яка передається із чудового Венкуверського острову. Говорить Павіна Макуарі, дякую, що рішили перебути зі мною наступну годину. Ми маємо дуже цікаві новини на сьогоднішній програмі. Hello there and welcome to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. I'm Paulette Demchuk-McQuarrie, your host, Pokrinske in Ukrainian, that's Pavlina. For listeners of the Vancouver broadcast on AM 1320, thank you so much for tuning in on this Thanksgiving weekend. And if you're time shifting or listening to the International PCJ Radio Edition on AM, FM, shortwave, online or in-flight, or to the podcast of either edition, a very warm welcome to you all. Vitayu. We have another great program for you on Ukrainian food flair. Natalia joins us with instructions on how to make homemade sauerkraut from the 1929 cookbook of Olya Sinatovich with a contemporary twist, as Natalia always manages to do. On Cultural Capsule, Vasil Pavlovsky has a profile on a lesser known but very prolific and talented 20th century composer, poet and artist. On Ukraine News Outlook, Keith Perron reports on President Yanukovych's state visit to Greece, a new nuclear waste facility, and the 1,000th anniversary of St. Sophia Cathedral. On Ukrainian Jewish Heritage, Melech Shekat will join us to tell us about the Jewish holiday of Yom Kippur, and an interview with American-Ukrainian author Valya Dudich-Lupescu, and right after our chat, a chance to win an autographed copy of her novel, The Silence of Trees. And that can be a personalized autograph, so stay tuned. As well, I'll be announcing the winners of last Sunday's draw for tickets to the Vancouver performance of The Talents of Ukraine, so lots coming up. And of course, we'll have a proverb of the week and other items of interest, as well as great Ukrainian music. And coming up next, we have the Ukrainians from their most recent CD and the title track. It's called Diaspora.
Козаки, братчо-сестри козацького роду, у серці живе Україна, крові мої, Україна, діаспора, діаспора. Diaspora, już dzio. Synowi to za ty, inozemcy, kozackiego rodu, my wszyscy twoi, Ukraino.
Червона рожа.
And from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, that was Tutti Tom with a number from their most recently released CD. It is self-titled, and the cover is white, and the song was The Wedding Suite. And before them, you heard UB from Edmonton, and that was a number from their most recent CD, and it was called Червона Рожа, The Red Hollyhock. Now, if you listened to the show last Sunday, you will recall that there was a contest for some free tickets being given away. There were three pairs, actually, two lucky callers that managed to get through to me. And I'll be announcing the names of those winners shortly. But there was another set of tickets to give away, and that was reserved for anybody who listened to the podcast, to the program, who sent me an email and entered that way into that email contest for that one other set of tickets. And everybody that emailed was entered into a draw, and this was, you know, very much on the up and up. I know you can't see me, and you know, this is all, you have to take my word for it, but it is done on the up and up. Everybody's name was put on a little piece of paper, and it was folded up and put in a bowl for a random draw. And to keep this on the up and up, I did have a helper so that you know it's not just me. And we've got somebody here who is going to draw the lucky winner's name right now. Take it away, Liam.
My name is Liam. I am going to pick a winner.
Okay, all right. And we'll mix up all the names. Okay, pick a name. Just one.
Yeah.
Say, and the winner is, in the microphone.
And the winner is... Luba Pedro. Congratulations, Luba.
Say goodbye.
Goodbye. Do you want to do this again? Could we?
No.
Oh, well, Liam, Mom always has the final say. But maybe we'll bring you back another time. I can always use some help here in Osh Holos, and you have been excellent. So thank you very much. And hope you come back to visit soon. In the meantime, I did promise to announce the names of the winners of last week's call-in, and so here they are. Joyce Herbachowski Vermeulen, Teresa Herchak, and Bill Dohe. So Joyce, Teresa, Bill, and Luba, we'll see you on Tuesday evening at the Talents of Ukraine 2011 tour at the Vancouver Centre for the Performing Arts.
Bowen Arts proudly presents the 2011 Talents of Ukraine Canadian Concert Tour of the legendary Donbas Professional Dance Ensemble from Donetsk, Ukraine. Audiences across Canada, from Vancouver to Montreal and points in between, will be amazed by feature artists Inessa Timochko on violin, soloist Svetlana Sasu, winner of the Tkatsisek International Competition, and all-Ukraine winner Yevhen Baskin. Tickets are on sale now. Don't delay. Order yours today. For more information, visit bowenarts.com. Vernon and District Performing Arts Center, Wednesday, October 12th. Edmonton Jubilee Auditorium, Friday, October 14th. University of Calgary McEwen Hall, Saturday, October 15th. Regina Connexus Arts Center, Sunday, October 16th. Saskatoon Art and Convention Center, Monday, October 17th. Yorkton Regional High School and Portneuf Theatre, Tuesday, October 18th. Winnipeg Pantages Playhouse Theatre, Wednesday, October 19th. Thunder Bay Community Auditorium, Thursday, October 20th. The Centrepoint Theatre in Ottawa, Monday, October 24th. Montreal Centre, Tuesday, October 25th.
And now, Ukrainian Food Flair with Natalia Buchok and a taste of Galician cuisine from 1929.
Vitaimo! Welcome to Ukrainian Food Flair on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. Today, your chance to be your own Martha Stewart. Olha's recipe for kapusta, otherwise known as sauerkraut. Before frozen foods and the importation of foods from warmer climes became the norm, sauerkraut provided a source of nutrients during the winter. Because it is a source of vitamin C and thus prevents scurvy, that scourge of the British Navy, early explorers like Captain James Cook always took a store of sauerkraut on their voyages. And during World War I, because of concerns that American consumers would reject a product with a German name, American sauerkraut producers relabeled their product Liberty Cabbage for the duration of the war. And now, a very special treat. Olha's recipe for sauerkraut for winter. Start by steaming an oak barrel. First, of course, you have to try and find one. If an oak barrel isn't handy, you can also make do with a ceramic crock or maybe even a glass bowl. Select nice white heads of cabbage. Place a shredder on the barrel and shred the cabbage, throwing away the cores. Sprinkle layers of the shredded cabbage with salt, about 3 tablespoons of salt for every 5 pounds of cabbage. Layer in also chopped or shredded carrots, cumin, and small sour apples. You can have some added fun with this by using red cabbage along with the green, so you'll end up with pink sauerkraut. Pack the cabbage very tight, tamping it down with a wooden pestle or similar object. Use your fist if all else fails. This helps force water out of the cabbage. When your barrel is full, cover with a dish or lid that is slightly smaller than the barrel opening. The brine should cover the lid. If the brine does not come up to the plate or if it evaporates during the fermentation process, you will have to add or replace it with salt water, a teaspoon of salt to every cup of water, well dissolved. Place a heavy stone on the lid and leave in the kitchen for a week. At the end of the week, remove the lid and stone and skim off the foam that has formed. Give the cabbage a good stir and then tamp down again. Get out all your aggression. Go for it. Wash the lid and the stone and replace. In a few days, skim off the foam again. Cover with a clean cloth and replace the lid and stone, having washed them well. In 10 days, take the barrel into the cellar. In a few weeks, the sauerkraut will be ready. The cloth, the lid, and the stone have to be washed well every week throughout this process. Follow these steps, and you'll be your own Martha Stewart, having your own sauerkraut. This is Natalia Buchok with Food Flair on Nash Holos, Ukrainian Roots Radio, asking you, is that wine in your barrel or just a good old-fashioned sauerkraut?
Thanks, Natalia. Join us again next week for Ukrainian Food Flair with Sylvia Pidraziuk-Molnar here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. You're listening to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, broadcasting from Vancouver Island, Canada, for PCJ Radio. Here now is Melach Sheket, Executive Director of the Jewish Heritage Center in Lviv, with a perspective on Ukrainian Jewish heritage.
Yom Kippur, День суду, or Судний день in Ukrainian, is known as the Day of Atonement. Yom Kippur is the holiest and most solemn day of the year for Jews, as the focus is on atonement and repentance. Jews traditionally observe this holiday with a 25-hour period of fasting and intense prayer, often spending most of the day in synagogue services. Yom Kippur completes the annual period known in Judaism as the High Holidays, or in Hebrew, Yamim Noraim, Days of Awe. Yom Kippur is the 10th day of the month of Tishrei. According to Jewish tradition, on Rosh Hashanah, God inscribes each person's fate for the coming year into the Book of Life and waits until Yom Kippur to seal the verdict. During the Days of Awe, a Jew tries to amend his or her behavior and seek forgiveness for wrongs done against God, in Hebrew, Bein Adam Lemakom, and against other human beings, or Bein Adam Lechavero. At the end of Yom Kippur, one considers oneself absolved by God. The 10 days leading up to Yom Kippur are known as the 10 days of repentance. During this period, Jews are encouraged to seek out anyone they may have offended and to sincerely request forgiveness so that the new year can begin with a clean slate. This process of repentance is called Teshuvah in Hebrew, and it is a crucial part of Yom Kippur. Although many people think that transgressions from the previous year are forgiven through prayer, fasting, and participation in Yom Kippur services, Jewish tradition teaches that only offenses committed against God can be forgiven on Yom Kippur. Hence, it is important that people make an effort to reconcile with others before participating in Yom Kippur services. Yom Kippur is a day to draw closer to God through prayer and fasting. Total abstention from food and drink usually begins 20 minutes before sundown and ends after nightfall the following day. This fast is called Tosefet Yom Kippur in Hebrew, literally meaning addition to Yom Kippur. Although the fast is required of all healthy adults, it is waived in the case of certain medical conditions. For Orthodox Jewish men, wearing the white clothing, in particular a white robe called the kittel, is traditional to symbolize one's purity on this day. On the day before Yom Kippur, many also immerse themselves in a ritual bath called the mikvah. The Yom Kippur synagogue service includes a public confession of sins, vidui in Hebrew, and a special order of service in which the Seder Avodah is recited, recalling the ancient service performed by the Kohen Gadol, the high priest of the Holy Temple in Jerusalem. During this service, the efforts of the Kohen Gadol brought atonement and spiritual cleansing for the Jewish people. Yom Kippur is also a day to remember our loved ones who have left this world and to remember those who were persecuted just for being born Jewish and perished at the hands of enemies of humanity. As well, Yom Kippur is a day of reconciliation when Jews strive to make amends with people to understand better each other. As we have lived together with the Ukrainian people for ages, looking back over time, we can see that black outside forces attempted to ruin our relations, working hard to break the unique cultural, economic, and societal ties between our people. Therefore, we commemorate in our Iskar remembrance prayers those Ukrainian and Jewish people who perished during Holodomor and Holocaust and during the many terrible Jewish pogroms initiated by the Tsar's Black Hundreds and other destructive movements, whose role and forces must be additionally studied and documented by reputable and fair-minded historians. Meanwhile, in Ukraine today, Jews and Ukrainians have a rare opportunity to rebuild and strengthen the cordial ties binding us together for centuries. Throughout the year, and at this time especially, was God's blessings and guidance as we work together towards that goal. Let all our prayers be heard and answered. Shalom.
Thank you, Milach. For more information on the work of the Jewish Heritage Center in Lviv, visit jewishheritage.org.ua.
Sid Wolowski, and this is Cultural Capsule, especially for Nash Holos. It seems that there were many Ukrainians who, in their very short lifespans, created a great deal. One such individual was Taras Shevchenko, who lived to the age of 47. And there were other literary artists who were not as well known as Ukraine's bard, though they were extremely prolific for their short time on this earth. Today's persona was one such person who, in his 28 years, managed to shape a great deal of contemporary Ukrainian poetry. The only son born to a Greek Catholic priest and his wife in the village of Novitsa on October 5th, 1909, in the ethnographic area known as Lemkivshchina, which is in the current-day Poland. He received his primary education under the watchful eye of a private teacher and then went on to complete his secondary studies at the Queen Sophia Gymnasium in Sano, which was one of the only secondary schools which taught both Polish and Ukrainian in the entire Lemko region. Throughout his 8 years of study there, he was considered to be one of the top pupils in his class, according to his classmates. In 1928, Bohdan Ihor Antonich enrolled in the Lviv University, which was known then as the Jan Kazimir University, specializing in Polish philology, though he actively engaged himself in learning all the nuances of the Ukrainian language, and in 1931 he published his first poem in the Ukrainian scouting movement Plast's publication Vohni, or Fires. While still at the university until graduation in 1933, he was academically active in all spheres of his literary craft, writing articles about foreign literature, translating, writing reviews, and honing his poetic skills. Upon graduation, he chose to be a writer, but on occasion he worked at two different literary magazines of the day. Antonich not only wrote, but painted, played violin, and dreamed of being a composer, and had in fact written the libretto to an opera called Dovbush, based on the character Dovbush, who was the Ukrainian Robin Hood of Ukraine's mountain dwellers, the Hutsuls. At the age of 28, after an acute case of appendicitis, Bohdan Ihor Antonich came down with pneumonia, which he died of on July 6, 1937. Before his death, he had completed and published 3 complete collections of poetry, and 2 more collections which were published posthumously. Some say he was influenced by Walt Whitman and the Persian philosopher Omar Khayyam. During Soviet times, his works were banned as he was considered a poet mystic. During the 1960s, he gained popularity in the diaspora and only received popularity in Ukraine in the late 1980s. I'm Vasily Pavlovsky, and this week's Cultural Capsule featured poet Bohdan Ihor Antonich.
Ukrainian News Outlook.
Yanukovych heads to Greece. New nuclear waste storage facility to be built, and the St. Sophia Cathedral celebrates 1,000 years. I'm Keith Parent. President Viktor Yanukovych has begun a 2-day state visit to Greece. He is scheduled to meet with the Prime Minister, George Papandreou, as well as the head of the leading opposition party, New Democracy, Antonios Samaras. In addition, Yanukovych will take part in the Ukrainian-Greek Business Forum, which aims to develop investment and cooperation in the fields of shipbuilding, transport, and tourism. Ukraine launched the construction of a new facility Wednesday to stockpile industrial nuclear waste in the contaminated zone around Chernobyl, the site of the worst nuclear accident in the last 25 years. The facility will be launched in early 2013 and will only house Ukrainian nuclear waste, a large part of which is currently stored in poorly equipped locations. The construction of the storage facility is estimated to cost over 11 million euros. Britain will be providing 12 million US dollars and the European Commission 2 million euros. The area around the plant is still very contaminated and is known as the Zone of Exclusion, which the population was evacuated and no economic activity is allowed. The St. Sophia Cathedral in Kiev celebrates its 1,000th anniversary this year. The World Heritage Protected Site will have a number of activities taking place to commemorate this. Alexandra Molokolop has the details.
Ukraine marked 1,000th anniversary of the foundation of St. Sophia Cathedral. Archaeologists have assumed that the construction was started and almost finished by Prince Volodymyr in the years of 1011-1015 and was completed by his son Yaroslav in 1018. Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych has said this church is a witness of Ukraine's nation, freedom and unity struggle.
The cathedral was and remains the embodiment of the spirit of Christian unity and the connecting link between the religious traditions of East and West.
In the ancient times, St. Sophia Cathedral was the main church of Kievan Rus, the residence of the Metropolitan of Kiev, and the square outside the cathedral, the main area of the state. Aside from its main building, the cathedral includes an ensemble of supporting structures, such as Bell Tower, the House of Metropolitan, and majestic 13-cupola sanctuary. Built in Byzantine style, it has unique interior of rich frescoes and mosaics, many of which are still intact 1,000 years later.
This is a sacred place. We are proud of it.
I've been to many countries, but never seen a building like this. It's unbelievable.
Nowadays, it is one of the city's best-known landmarks. The church housed the first library and school in Kievan Rus. Today, meetings with foreign diplomats and treaty negotiations are being held here. In 1990, the cathedral was added to the World's Heritage List of UNESCO. 19 years later, this anniversary was included to the calendar of important dates, and now the millennium of the cathedral is celebrated worldwide. A millennium later, the St. Sophia Cathedral makes a huge impression on tourists and worshippers of Kiev and from abroad. Since 1995, when the bloody clash took place here, no religious body has been given the rights for regular services. The complex now remains one of the most significant sacred places of world's Christianity. Oleksandra Molodkova, Kiev.
And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Ukraine News Outlook. I'm Keith Parron.
You're listening to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, broadcasting from Vancouver Island, Canada, for PCJ Radio. Valian Dudich Lupescu is a Ukrainian-American author from Chicago who recently released a novel called The Silence of Trees. It is her first novel. It is set in contemporary America as well as post-World War II Ukraine. And some listeners might recall the early days of this novel, which is a very popular seller on Amazon. Valian and I spoke a few weeks ago on Skype.
Thanks so much for joining us, Valia.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, this is your first novel, and you live in Chicago.
I do. I did live in Frankfurt, Germany for a few years, but Chicago is home.
Okay. Were you born in the States?
I was in Chicago.
That's where your roots are. Great. So, now, you've written a book called The Silence of Trees, and it's a story that's not known by most people, particularly in America. So, just tell us a little bit about the storyline.
Sure. The story begins with our heroine, Nadia. At the age of 17, she is living in a small village in Ukraine, western Ukraine, at the time when Ukraine is occupied by the Germans, but the Russians are coming back. So it's one of those changing fronts, the final change. This would have been in 44. And while their village has been fairly peaceful for a little while, that's all about to change and explode. But Nadia hears that there is a gypsy fortune teller camped outside her village, and all of the young girls sneak out and have their fortune told, and she wants to do the same, and her mother is absolutely against it. And of course, Nadia, at that age, with dreams of what the future may hold, decides that she will sneak out in the middle of the night and have her fortune told. And so she does. But what she encounters is not what she expects. And when she returns home, she finds her family's house and barn on fire, and they're gone. She never sees them again, and she decides to flee west with the man that she loves. And soon he's also taken, and she's alone, travels to the displaced persons camps, well, first to the work camps, then to the DP camps in Germany, and eventually meets the man that she marries and moves to America and begins her life there. So much of the story flashes back and forth between the past and the present.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the story began while I was in graduate school at the Art Institute, and I was working on a nonfiction piece at the time about my grandparents' immigration. And it was a time for me to really ask them questions that I had wondered about for a long time. And I was surprised that they were very, very secretive and reluctant to talk about that time. And as I started talking with other people of that generation, it was something repeated again and again, that this isn't something that we talk about. And mm-hmm. and it was a mixture of fear for their families still that were left in Ukraine, and also some feelings of guilt for those that they left behind and the way their life was. And so I started collecting interviews and doing more research. And this was back in the days before the internet had so much available. Mm-hmm. And I realized at that time that the story I wanted to tell wasn't a nonfiction piece after all, that I wanted to really get you into the heart of some of these characters, of these people. And so I created a fictional story, but very much based on these stories that I was hearing. And I found it very, very interesting because so many of them had never spoken about this time. This was the first time that they did to me. And so when I started writing the novel, I wanted to capture the complexity of that character and tell those stories that had never been heard, precisely because they were so valuable and in danger of being lost forever.
So it's amazing how you did that, because people of that era, they don't want to talk about it, and there's shame, and there's probably fear, as you said, that there could be repercussions, or maybe it's kind of an ingrained fear. How did you get them to talk?
I guess I have a trusting face. But ever since I was little, I was the little kid in the corner listening. And when I would get on the bus, I'm the one that the people come and sit next to and tell their life story. So perhaps it's something they pick up on. I would never disclose any information that people didn't feel comfortable sharing. And many times they would say, I'm going to tell you this, but please don't record this, or please don't record this specific name or the specific village, because there was still a lot of fear. This was a time in history that people changed their names, both intentionally and unintentionally, coming to America or coming to another country. They tried to leave behind their past. And so they really were reluctant. And so there was a trust, I think, that I established with the people that I spoke with, my grandparents included. And so the story as it is, the events that happened to Nadia are fictional. This isn't any one thing or any collection of things that happened to my grandparents or to even people I know. But at the same time, it's very true, because it is like what happened to all the people to many of the people that I spoke with or read their accounts later, not just Ukrainian, but of the different Eastern European groups that went through World War II.
So was there a turning point that made you decide that you wanted to do a fictional after all?
I'd been sitting in a class. We had a guest speaker, Stuart Dybek, a Chicago writer of Polish descent. And he has written several really wonderful collections of short stories, one of which is The Coast of Chicago. And in his stories, he really captures the flavor of the ethnic neighborhood and characters that you can relate to that felt very real. And prior to that, I don't know. I felt as if I didn't have permission to write about these everyday people that I had grown up with. And then hearing him read and talk about it, I realized that may be precisely the reason I should write these stories. And so, yes, it was Halloween, and I remember going home, and I wrote the first three chapters of the book that night. And
wow.
That was really the turning point. The characters just came to life, and I couldn't silence them, so I kept going.
Wow. Now, your book is called The Silence of Trees. Is there a particular reason you chose that title? Does it have any significance to anything?
Of course. But I can't spoil it and tell you exactly why. It has a lot of meaning. It's multifaceted. There are many different kinds of trees, both literal and figurative. In the book, there are the trees that Nadia sits beside when she's in the camps. There are the trees in America. There's the idea that the ancestors go into the trees when they pass away, and we bring in their leaves and bring in the greenery for Zeleni Sviata. So there are a lot of different trees in the book, and the title echoes all of those meanings.
You incorporate a lot of tradition, a lot of background. Nadia is very holds on to her Ukrainian heritage, as so many post-war immigrants to Canada, as well as obviously the United States did, and you wove that in very nicely.
Thank you. It's it was very much a part of what I wanted to preserve. I think it reflected, it informed her character a great deal and reflected that time period. But at the same time, in writing this book, I wanted to honor those women, men and women of that time, but also to preserve some of these traditions. It's been interesting in recent days when I've met some of the newer immigrants to America that came over in the 90s and in recent times. And for many of them, the stories of the displaced person camps and some of the traditions that were held onto so strongly by Mike Baba and Yida have been lost or have not ever been learned. And so for many of them, as they read these traditions, they're surprised and they're learning. And there is a movement among the younger people in Ukraine right now to recapture some of those lost traditions.
That's great. Isn't it fabulous to know that your book has a part of that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's also, the novel falls into a genre called magic realism. And it was a deliberate choice, too, as a literary device, to create a world that is real. It's certainly not fantasy. It's a realistic world, especially with the grim reality of World War II. But there are these magical elements, these superstitions, that these dreams that come true, or these little things that you see out of the corner of your eye. And that creates this idea of magic realism. It's two worlds, sort of the magic and the realistic coexisting. And Nadia's reality is very much this person caught in the threshold between the old world and all that she left behind in Ukraine and the new world and all that she's embracing in America. Mm-hmm. And so she's sort of on the threshold. And so magic realism as a literary device reflects that part of her character as well. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I felt, even as a second generation Ukrainian American woman, I felt very much connected to. I think it's the same in Canada where, in many parts of the United States, where the children of my generation, we grew up speaking Ukrainian, often before we spoke English, going to Ukrainian school, doing Ukrainian dancing, going to the Ukrainian church. And so there was this very big part of our identity in our lives that was Ukrainian. And then there was the other part, the more Western part, where we'd have our friends from school. And so it was also this idea of sort of standing in the threshold between those two worlds, which is part of what I found so fascinating about this character of Nadia.
You've been working on this book for a long time. Just before I turned on the record button here, you were saying that back in 2008, you started to promote your book even before the publisher had it. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, the book I started while I was still in graduate school, so in 1995. And it took me on and off about 10 years to write. I did a lot of research in the beginning as I was writing. And then I had three children, and so that put writing on hold and promoting on hold. And we moved to Germany and came back to America and moved back to Germany again. And so the last time when we were living in Germany in 2008, my youngest was finally sort of sleeping through the night, and I heard about this Amazon Breakthrough Novel Award, where unpublished manuscripts were submitted on Amazon, and then small sections of the manuscript were made available to readers to read and review. And at that time, we weren't sure how exactly the winners would be chosen, but there was this idea that you want to get as many votes as possible. And so I was thrilled and humbled by the support, especially from the Ukrainian people in Ukraine and in diaspora, who just galvanized and spread the word and read this particular section and voted positively. And it got quite a bit of media attention in the States and in Europe. And yes, Radio for Europe gave me a call and we did an interview. And it was very exciting, the support that came up. And so after that, I got the attention of an agent actually through the contest and began down this road. For so many writers starting out, you have to do so much of the promotion yourself anyway, whether it's a small press or an independent press or even some of the larger publishing houses. So I've been I've been trying to use the social networking sites. As you say, we met on Twitter, spreading the word that way. I've been able to get some really well-known reviewers to review the book that way and spread the word. And the sales, for example, on Amazon have been fantastic. It's just we live in a different world. And the Kindle sales, last month for August, we sold over 5,000 Kindle books of The Silence of Trees. And it was actually ranked 66th of all Kindle books at Amazon for one day, which was remarkable to think that that many people are reading the story of Nadia and her life and the experiences of this woman.
Congratulations. That's great. Actually, I had an eye injury. And so when you sent me the book, I was having trouble reading the print copy, and I found a copy on Kobo. So that's great. Great to have this story being circulated like that. And thanks for coming on Nash Hollis and telling us about it. Hopefully we can get more readership for it yet. I personally think it's just a fabulous story and one that no one should miss out on. So thank you for writing it. Thank you for coming on to Nash Hollis and telling us about it. And hopefully there will be a sequel, a prequel, or more like it.
Thank you. Someday, yes, there's another book in the works for sure.
Awesome. Good luck with your next novel.
Thank you.
And I was speaking with Vanya Dudic-Lupescu, author of The Silence of Trees. And Vanya has very kindly offered two copies of her novel, The Silence of Trees, to Nash Hollis, two lucky listeners. And she's offered to autograph them for you, personalized if you like. So email producer@nashhollis.com and give me your name, phone number, and address so that Vanya knows where to send the book. And also, what edition of Nash Hollis you heard the contest details on, whether it was on the broadcast on Sunday, October the 9th in Vancouver, or the podcast, or if it was the PCJ International Edition podcast, or if it was a live broadcast on the PCJ Radio Network on any of the partner stations. So that's what you need to do to enter on the email draw. You do need to get that into me by the end of October. Here is Zubrivka from Toronto, from their CDs Novu Vdoma, Home Again, and Techa Voda Kalamutna, Muddy Waters Flowing.
Я не спутна нам сердце.
very best in Ukrainian programming, tune in to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio every Sunday evening at 6 p.m., AM 1320 on the radio dial in Vancouver, online at am1320.com. In Nanaimo on the PCJ Network, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on 101.7 FM and online at chly.ca. Elsewhere, Nash Holos airs on AM, FM, and shortwave radio on the PCJ Radio Network in over 28 countries. Podcasts available at nashholos.com as well as at pcjmedia.com and on iTunes. На жаль, всі кінчили нашу програму, вже час додому і сказати до побачення, але перед тим я хочу залишити вас такими словами мудрості. Війна напевно буде, як два дурні себе стріне. And our proverb of the week translates as when two idiots meet, expect a war. Well, our time is just about up, so to take us to the end of our program, the female beat from Winnipeg from their most recent CD, Sealed with a Kiss, and they'll be wrapping it up with the Wedding Planner Polka. I'm Paulette Demchik-McQuarrie, on behalf of all of us here at Nash Holos and PCJ Radio, thanks so much for listening. Until next time, до побачення!